Right, this is hopefully going to be an episode of Counterpoints, because if you're hearing me fine and this is all good on YouTube, then don't you worry about it. But I might have been frustrated trying to set up this new laptop. So whatever. We did get the sound working. We checked that you can hear in the recording. So we're going to just do one. Right, this is obviously Counterpoints with me, a maniac. On this episode, we are going to probably just mainly we'll start with IEM Sydney and then we'll see where we go from there, maniac. So first things first, actually, the most obvious topic to start with, and I actually thought this was the weirdest part for me about the broadcast, mate, is people did almost just mainly make it like it was a CSGO tournament in CS2, if you know what I mean. Even all the analysis everyone was doing online, like it's like everyone just talks like this is CSGO. So my first thoughts were just, what did you actually think about the aspect that it was in CS2? Like, did it seemed like it was much different? Did it feel like CSGO to you? Did you think actually generally the good players were good and the bad players were good? Did you seem like the bugs affected things? What was your sense in that regard?
I would say, first of all, it wasn't as scuffed as I thought it would be. I think I had a very, very gross fear and apprehension of what the Counter-Strike would be
Right.
there. Like, as we talked about, mixed and meshed with bugs and whatever, it felt like they kind of dodged the main parts on that one. I will say I could definitely see it was different than CSGO. It was right in front of my face, couldn't ignore it. I think the level in general was relatively low, and I think it is what we had expected. I think for the show, the meta and how CS2 is actually currently played, it made up for entertaining games, and it was like kind of electric. And as a viewer, as a spectator, I enjoyed it. But I have to say that definitely there were a few issues. Like, individuals are definitely not all up to the level, and some teams were a little bit ahead of others. So I don't know. I think overall this was better than what I had anticipated, because I was very much apprehending this one. But yeah, it definitely not CSGO. Definitely not.
Because that was the weirdest thing to me, is like, if I actually just look on the Wikipedia, you could even think this was just CSGO. Like, in general, the only obvious crazy one was complexity. But even then, they have sort of been simmering. They've been getting better and better and better as things go. And that's what's weird to me. I almost feel like part of me wants to tell everyone it's CS2. So let's like lower all expectations. Let's not overreact to these results. Let's get like a few tournaments around when they will really know, like, was it a fluke? Was it not? But part of me also did feel at the same time like the fundamentals of CS are the same. It is like CSGO. But then again, at the same time, like, for example, here's what's funny. When you talk about FaZe Clan, if you look at the FaZe Clan numbers, it actually looks like a normal FaZe Clan with Maniac. Like, if you notice, almost every time they win, if people don't know, I think there's only one time ever that they won when Rain didn't have like the overperformance. If people don't know, it's actually, this is why I actually push back on the idea that like when people say Carrigan has a super team, it's like maybe in past teams, those are super team players who every tournament would do the 1.25 rating. But now actually, they do it by committee, as in like one guy has an off game and then Rops has that carry game and then Brokey has an amazing map on this one. So the usually what to me actually it's the Rain like overperformance at the major or the Cologne, where they get, that's usually what puts you over the top and makes you like the champion. So that part makes sense. But then, for example, I have to say, if someone's a newer fan and you're like, you wanted to hear what was the first CS2 tournament like, I have to say it did look though like people like Carrigan and FaZe have put in some hours on some of the new things in CS2, like some of the different grenades and how you use the smoke stuff, and that did feel different from the team that we saw. I mean, because here's the reason I'm bringing this up, Maniac, as an initial topic, is if FaZe wins the tournament, we can't just say it was like CSGO, because the narrative everyone had in CSGO was maybe FaZe is winding down and the lineup
Of
doesn't
course.
work. And should Rain be kicked? Should they change a player? Should you gamble and go for someone? That was kind of the angle people were setting up. So I almost feel like that narrative, I can't fully connect it in the same way, because like I say, I do feel as though one of the things people complained about with the old FaZe is some people, like I know Cassad on my Hot Take Point Major thought this. He often thought that essentially, whether you blame Carrigan for this or not, that a lot of the problem with FaZe was they almost played like a stereotypical international loose team, and that he thought actually they didn't sometimes have the new nades and the new grenades and stuff that, like, even if I don't like them, teams like Furia would invent a new smoke grenade, or we all know the Heroics of the world always had on the. What did you get in that sense? I got a sense actually like FaZe did put in the homework on this one, mate.
Well, first of all, I would say I think tactically we are pretty much at a baseline level right now when it comes to CS2. Like, I haven't sure teams have probably put a whole lot of effort into thinking when can we use the grenade to break the smoke, when is the moment this can
Yes.
change. But I still believe that there is a long, long way to go in like optimizing this. I think FaZe were up there in the usage of that. But what I think personally is that in the context of this event, in like this snapshot in time, I think the lineup was very well positioned for that transition to CS2. Because on one hand, you have Robs, who's very obviously put a whole lot of effort into it.
Sure.
Trying to understand how the game is being played. Yes. What can we do about it? What are sort of the intrications of like the changes that have been made? And I think you could definitely see he was definitely confident and kind of competent with it. But also a man like Rain, the way I see it is, how does the meta either favor or unfavors a player's playstyle? And Rain said it himself. Like, he loves to go for these duels. He loves to like take speed, wide angles, go for duels. That's exactly what the meta is about right now. That's how the game is made. Like, we kept talking about the sound being a little bit scuffed, so you don't exactly know where people are in front of you. And then the white peaks advantage, how hard it is to hold an angle. This is something that is absolutely perfect for him. So all of these things kind of put together, I feel like it really gave them a boost, like individually speaking, great performance. Even Brokey, if you think about it, Brokey, not necessarily a top three AWPer in the world, but yes, decent with the rifle, can be crazy, can be a little bit, you know, jumping out of smokes and be chaotic and whatever. This is the perfect time to do it. So I think in this like kind of microcosm, the players were put in a very good position to shine and just overperform slightly compared to what they were doing past. And this is kind of the recipe for FaZe. As far as I'm concerned, this doesn't tell me that FaZe is out of the woods and it's going to be amazing in the next few months. Like, we already hear about Twist and like these reports that him going away from the team. I think this win was just it was about a perfect storm for them, is where the game is at, how the players sync up with the state of the game, what meta is favored, how are the players comfortable with it. And when it came all together, it put them in a really great spot.
Yeah, actually, the other thing as well to me is, this is why the Rain topic is, I actually find as an analyst, it tortures me. Because the problem is, people tie it into like how they feel as a fan about Rain. So, and also, by the way, if people don't know, he's what you call, if you know the sporting term, he's like a player's player. Like, the other players all respect him. It's actually why, if you ever hear Carrigan never thought about cutting him, and the other players all would be like, no, we've never cut, like, Havar, whatever his name is. You know, he's a legend and a beast. But the problem is, as an analyst, your job sometimes really is, even if you're like number three in the world, to be like, actually, this is where you need to upgrade, and that could get you to number one. Now, to a fan, it's like, so you don't believe in him, and he's got like, no. The point is, we just have to look at like, how could you max a team out? And the problem with Rain, obviously, is he doesn't do this every tournament. Now, look, that's the problem. The fan will tell you he just does this all the time. Like, here's the thing. Maniac's definitely not a hater. He wouldn't ever say like, oh, maybe you could get, you know, like a Frozen in. He wouldn't say that if like Rain was posting like a 1.2 rating every event, would he? The point is, he has events where he is a 1.04 or whatever, which, look, isn't his fault. Like I say, if you had simple, but like prime simple, you'd probably get away with that. But on this team, it looks like, to be the best phase, the one that blows you out, you do need like the 1.15, 1.2 rating Rain. And the thing is, this guy, it's a joke that we focus on the IGLs for the age thing, dude, because we go like Snappy and Carrigan, what age is just a number? They're just using their brains though, guys. Like, the thing with Rain is, this guy's really old. I don't know if any player this old had just like, it almost looks like his raw skill didn't decay much. It did decay a bit, guys. When he used to play as the star with like the Alu lineup in FaZe, he was definitely better than this. Like, that was where every tournament he was like almost their MVP, as it were. So he has degraded. But like, the thing that gave it away on this tournament for me is, mate, right, normally if it was just like you're giving him the MVP because of impact, you know, here's the thing. Logically, that would be like, oh, he overperformed the like T-side. You know, he got a bunch of entries. He's playing like a bit. No. If you go and look, dude, he's like the 8th or 9th best CT rated player at the tournament, which is like CT that, I don't know if you know this, guys. One, he's definitely not getting all the best spots, except for certain maps, like obviously a nuke, and he's a classic on that one. That's like one of the rare positions he has. That's like a big fragger position. But aside from that, like, CT side essentially is just a measure of skill. Like, most of the time in that scenario, that's actually where I've always thought, if you go and look, that's where the Nikos, the Zerus, they should basically perform there almost no matter what happens, because they can just get their frags. Like, you sit in your spot, you take your fights, it's almost like playing DM. So that's the part that's very impressive to me, is like, everyone likes to praise other players when they roll back the years, but they do it for a match or whatever. Like, what's weird is, even if he doesn't do it every tournament, let's say he does it like one every four tournaments, that in itself is blowing my mind, dude. Like, that mate, this is why, in a way, he's almost like an outlier to whatever rule I have about dropping off and decay or something, you know. Because I have to say, the player that did that there, I mean, I used to have this joke when someone had one good match, but now it should apply. This tournament, like, that should have bought him another 3 months at least. Like, maybe another 6 months. You've got to give him a crack, haven't you? If you play like that as the fourth man, how can I kick you now? I've got to keep you. I've got to see if you can do it again, haven't I?
No, definitely. I think he's made a really good case for himself. I also think, as I said, that the current state of the game suits him very well. Like, if you think about how, even you kind of, the impact you're talking about on the CT side, Rain is someone that gets into the duel. Like, he's not a off-angle waiter that gets into a multi-kill the way Robs would do it, for example. If you look at Robs' POV, he's usually waiting in the right angle, and he gets that free kill and repositions a little bit. Rain is more of a in-your-face type guy. Like, this is my position. I'm going to ask for a flash, and I'm going to white swing. You talk about Nuke outside. He does that. Overpass, notoriously aggressive on how he plays the CT side. That's how the game is being played currently. And what if the game remains in that vein for a while, that maybe he could fucking dominate? Because that's exactly what he likes to do. Now, this kind of segues me to the next topic, which I believe is an issue currently, is that I feel like off angles are not being rewarded enough in CS2. And that's something.
Because advantage is too good.
Yeah, exactly. The picker is not just way too good. Like, this used to be about knowing and anticipating where your next duel is about to be, and then finding the right position for you to get that easy duel so you can turn into a multi-kill. That's one of the reasons why we saw so little, like, stationary multi-kills on the CT side. Because even if you had the right angle, it was so complicated to win the first duel that you would eventually get traded immediately. You'd never get these, one of these super, like, mega spray down. I mean, Twist had a couple of crazy moments, but even then he was moving. Like, if you think about Vertigo, that 4K he's got on B-side, he's just waiting. Like, he's turning around, he's getting angles, super mobile. Listen, I hope it's going to get eventually a bit balanced out. Like, I like that the game favors a bit of aggression and movement. It's cool. It's paceful. It's nice to watch. I hope it's going to get fixed just a little bit. But yeah, for the moment, yeah, just like, I think Rain had a very good time. Like, I think you have three strong cases for MVP in that event. The fact that he gets it, I don't think is a tragedy. I think he's a very good candidate for MVP in that event.
Now, if people don't know, I actually have no qualms whatsoever. I've given him my MVP as well. Because the reason why is, like, look, the others, I can actually make an almost an even case. So the reason why in this case I give it to him is because he basically almost stats-wise did do it. And then obviously he literally carried the last map that won the tournament. But then if you look at it, I know he's not doing that from all the best roles. And I know he's not getting all the resources. In fact, his job is to give other people resources sometimes. And actually, I'll tag on to what you said there as well. I'm going to add Rain. I've got a short list. There's not many people on this list, mate. And these are players. I have Apex on this list, most famously. These are players where what I respect is, even as their game degrades, their confidence doesn't degrade. Like, I always say about Apex, he actually loves it because no one ever gives him his fucking flowers, so he loves that I do this. I always say famously, the reason I always thought he was one of the best entries, might be the best entry ever in CS, is because even if he was going and peeking into prime simple with the AWP, he did it like he was peeking into Torji with an AWP now, and he thinks he can get the kill. He'll still just peek and go for the shot, and it always felt like he didn't get affected by the name. Everyone else, I've seen these motherfuckers when the first guy goes around the corner and dies, as simple. You see their brain go like, wait a minute, should I slow down? You know what I mean? Like, they don't just fall around like it's a bug. Yeah. And so I have to say, there's one thing about Rain that is crazy. This is why I can understand why the other players all like revere him so much. If you ever watch how he plays, dude, he never got the memo that his skills dropped off at all. He plays like his aim is AK is as crisp as it ever was. He goes straight to, like you say, he takes the duel. Because here's why I want to make this clear to people. This is so rare for any great player that's dropped off and gone to side roles. Use the old guy who used to be his best mate in the team, fucking Olofmeister. At the end, it was depressing, dude. I remember 2015 Olofmeister, who was a beast, mate. This was a monster rifler. He would try this. He would try and take those angles, mate, and you just get mopped up. Like, I'd see him take like a normal off angle, and it'd be like normal Olofmeister, get a 3K there. He couldn't get the first kill sometimes. He was getting wide peeked by everyone. They were just clapping him. And then you just realise, well, actually, you know how the game goes in CS. Like, in CS, I always say, like, a year in esports feels it is worth like 3 or 5 in real sports. Like, that's just what happens. You have to think of Olofmeister as a 40-year-old football player. Then, of course, he doesn't have the pace. Of course, he doesn't have the power anymore. You know what I mean? Like, there's only the joke here is in this analogy. I guess fucking Reigns Ronaldo or something. Like, he's still doing it. Like, he's still beasting. Like, it doesn't even make sense. So, I actually just want to make an emphasis there. If people have watched a lot of my stuff over the years, this is why. Don't worry. If he has 3 bad tournaments, I'll have to bring the topic up again. What if that was Frozen or someone maniac? But the problem is, I still love it when he does it. I still think it's the shit. It's just that because, by definition, if you're an outlier, I can't put that in my normal pattern, can I? You're defying my pattern recognition skills. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, yeah, how about this then? What about as a team, though? What about as the way they won this event as a team? Like, did you actually think, like, for example, you pointed out, like, Brokey seems like he was reinvigorated by the game as well, right? Like, I actually thought also Brokey was another player who's getting a bit more quiet. Like, one of the things I'll say about the end of CSGO is, look, I'm a big Rops fan, so in a way, I liked it. But I also hated that eventually it became like, right, Rops, save us. And it's like, it's not like he could add to the game. Like, I'll take. It's like, eventually, they sometimes needed like a 25-kill mega lurk performance where he won 4, 1v3. And that is the thing. Rops can do that regularly, but no team can. That's not a tactic. You know that joke, Maniac, where people say he's the clutcher. It's not actually a real role. It's more like you just leave him more towards the end of the round. You don't have the first rotation. It's not a real role. Like, Nix's job actually wasn't win 1v3s, guys. That's just actually like alien shit that he used to be so good. So to me, I actually do feel like if this almost did, this is why I asked the CS2 question. It actually does feel like it's maybe, I don't know if it's the individual players, but the first players have almost like got a buff off this or something, or a boost. Because again, everyone knows the overpass round, everyone thinking of that was like prime Brokey, man. That was like the beginning of 2022. It's like, is this guy actually going to be like, again, he's not a traditional AWPer, but is this guy like a top 4-3 AWPer in the world, as in using the gun to kill people?
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it. He's not a traditional AWPer. And I think our definition of what a traditional AWPer is now in CS2 is maybe going to have to adapt compared to what we had in CSGO, right? I think there were notorious profiles throughout the event who were the best in CSGO and then obviously felt some sort of decrease and some of an adjustment time where some things are not exactly working. I think we can touch on it a little bit later, but like seeing Zywoo go from the rifle to the AWP to then absolutely get wrecked when he was actually destroying on the rifle really broke my heart. Let's call it the whatever learning pains or whatever it is, growing pains, right? Whereas for Brokey, if you'd asked me to make a case for him in CSGO, I would have never told you like, oh, you know, he's a very good punitive AWPer. He has very good strong angles. He will always... No, that's not what I would say. I would say he's very in your face. He's the kind of guy that's going to whip up a crazy clutch because he's crossing a smoke. He's good at commando, like quick scoping people, making these kinds of crazy plays. That's what he does. And he kept on doing that in Sydney. He did that with the rifle. He did that a couple of times with the ADWP. Who else has that play style and did good as well? Monacy. Monacy is another example. Super dynamic, super explosive AWP in your face, but breaking the rules here and there. That play style worked in Sydney, and the players who were comfortable in it got the buff off of it. That's just as simple as it is. Monacy is an example. Brokey is an example. So good for them. What I do wonder is, where is it going to stabilize over time? Are we going to see like other players kind of get used to that playstyle? Is the game going to stay the same, or is it going to be like a catch-up game where they actually become the leading ones? Because this is one of the things as well, segues into another topic, but I think the transition to CSGO to CS2 is not lived the same way by all the players, because if you are one of the best players in the world, that transition can be more harmful to you than it is to someone that's behind you. Because you're the one that kind of dominated whatever the condition, whatever the realm was. You were the one that were on top of it. If you're Nico, you were the best rifle. There was no doubt. You were the one that was defining all of the rules. If you were Zywoo, if you were Simple, you were up there. Now there's a change. There's a shuffles. The conditions aren't exactly the same. The game is not played the same. You are losing your position. And whatever it is that you thought you knew how to do and you had completely, basically embodied in your brain, that you might have to go out of this. And I think some players that came in with a fresh mindset got the benefit of it because they just decided, hey, listen, this isn't CSGO. Like, I'm just going to do the way I want to do it. And that's it. And Brokey, I think, suits that profile.
The thing I'll say as well is, like I say, if you ever just go and look at like the stats page for the event or the team, in general, most of it still makes sense. It's still CS. Like spoiler, Monacy being top of the rating is not really a massive shock. If I tell you, like, Electronico, these are players who have been up there. But obviously, like, you name two of them. The two crazy ones is, remember, if I asked a fan, who's going to be good in CS2? You almost want to go, well, it's cheating to say Nico, Simple, and Zywoo, isn't it? But it's like, spoiler, I know they didn't pay a massive sample size for Zywoo, but Zywoo and Nico look fucking pedestrian at this tournament. Like, if I took the nameplates off, boys, I don't know if you recognise them. Meanwhile, the obvious one that it goes the other way on is Elige. Looks like he's back in bloody like 2019 or something. In fact, I'll even add this in. Elige almost made the case for me at this event that like a little bit of the game complaining is overblown. Like, here's the thing, Boggs is one thing, like issues with the net cord and the and whether it's like lagged on whether it's lagged on your screen even though you did shoot the guy, these are separate issues, right? That's separate to me. But in the game, like, for example, he pulled off some of the classic like Elige sprays. Everyone was telling you the whole time, the spray doesn't work, it's broken, isn't it, mate? He's one of the best spray players ever. By the way, same with Magisk. These players look like they're just back in CSGO. Like, they're loving it, mate. They've immediately adapted. I don't know if they put the hours in, but it looked awesome. Like, obviously the angle now is the joke is right now, everyone, there's a story we'll talk about in a second, which is maybe Twist is going back to Liquid. I mean, it's essentially happening as far as I know. All information says yes, what I've heard means it's happening. But the angle is now they look silly, meaning they've kicked fucking Patsy and Rainwick for kicking a leash. Like, if you knew he was going to be like this, you never kick him, you just keep him in the team. Like, he looks banging right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. This was really, really impressive from Elise and from Complex City as a whole. I mean, they've shown... I think the path to the grand final was not the craziest path ever. But
it's an easier one because essentially people don't know that it's not their fault. It's just that they benefited from all the upsets. If you look who they kept getting... It was the Bet Booms of the world. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And Monty's... I mean,
they still beat G2. They beat G2 sure. very cleanly. Yeah, yeah. That's a victory you cannot take away from them. But yeah, I mean... I think Elise's performance is really crazy. I think Floppy as well had a huge uptick compared to what we know he was doing in CSGO. And that's a topic that they touched on as well on interviews, talking about how he was too harsh on himself and then trying to help him out of that whatever pit he was in. I don't know what happened behind closed doors. It seemed to work out. But I think Elise is probably another great example of, look, one of the characteristics of players that are being tested when you change game is the ability to... get yourself out of whatever mindset you are in and attack a new problem and try and find solutions instead of complaining about it. Like it is like for a period of time, for a few months, the players that have the best mindset in regard to this new problem that's coming their way and the players who can deal with that the best are going to get ahead. They are going to get ahead. That's just it. If you're just, I mean, I'm not saying that's what pro players are doing, but if you're doing is just sitting in front of your PC and complain about the game and say, you know what, fuck this CS2. I hate it. I hate, this is not my game. What happened to CSGO? That's not how you're going to get ahead and fucking tame these issues that you're having. It's just not. And I think Elise, we always painted Elise as a guy a little bit a la Robs, who's got this ability to like analyze the game and think about the intricacies. Okay, what is it that they've changed? How can I play around it? It seems like he's done the same here. And ta-da, crazy, holy shit, he's actually delivering. So I think he's being rewarded for that. And that's great to see him individually being back on top. And I also think, to stay on that Elise topic, He showed some ability to self-reflect in some of these interviews that I hadn't seen from him in the past, where he seemed to finally be aware that his demeanor and his behavior is under the microscope when he's in Complexity because of the impact he's got on the other players. And that has always been the case, and I was very worried about it at the beginning of this lineup because he was a bit too expressive for my liking. He was letting the frustration out, and it's very obviously impacted everyone on that role. Like, guys like Grimm have a tendency to disappear when the atmosphere is negative. Sure. Floppy is not going to be the guy that's going to take you up or that push you upwards if you're having issues. Halzerk has prone to frustration as well. So Elise seemed to acknowledge that, hey, I have to be very careful with what is it that I let out, and I have to be very careful with the vibes I'm giving off to my team while we're having tough moments. And if he can't do that, then you're basically getting rid of all the negatives that I thought were attached to having Elise. Like, let's not fucking beat around the bush. Like, we knew Elise had a tendency to be frustrated and to whine around. That's just a fact. That was the case in Liquid. We had the camera shots. We used to see him play. But if that's something he can have under control now and just kind of filter the negative, give the positive out, his experience, tenure on the stage and all of that to the guys of Complexity, that's when they actually pulled the heist. That's where some people say that was one of the best roster moves they could ever do, like to grab Elise. I feel like this all came together in Sydney, and good for them.
And as always, I'll be careful what I reveal and don't based on what I'm allowed to. But spoiler, I'll just give you a little bit of fire, okay? Because what I do is I just wait for the statute of limitations to run out many a quit. It's not a problem to say anymore. So, okay, I'll just say what no one else has ever told any of you. It wasn't at all the case, like people think, that there was a negotiation going on. And then, you know, he was leaning towards EG Maniac. And then what happened is Cole came in, you know, Jason Lake and Messi also sat him down. They gave him the whole speech, you know. They had the Dallas Cowboys star on. They were like, listen, we envision you as this. No, he was going to be on EG. That was literally going to happen. And then it was actually EG that backed out of that whole mad lineup where it was like him and then like Jax and like those Russian players like Zorty and that was going to be the lineup. Minute I've heard behind the scenes from a whole bunch of the people. I have the best sources as well, by the way. I don't just have a manager of some team that saw someone in a scrim server and then goes, it's happening. You know, like I'm not from CIS region. I don't know if people are aware of that. Like, so I'm legit. So I know what I'm talking about. So as far as, here's the thing, Maniac, he was going to be on EG. He actually had turned down the call offer, and spoiler, the EG offer was a lot more money. I'm going to tell you that right now. So I don't blame him. And I'll also say this as well. The EG roster looked better. That looked like he had some banger players. I think his Aussie guys had stood, mate. That actually was an interesting roster. So actually, this was kind of the second choice. And I'll just say this straight up. Fair play to Cole, though, for not holding any like ill feelings. Because even if you're the second choice, it is the player you wanted. Like you're saying, it's a banger signing for you. He's NA. Like you say, I think he's the greatest NA player ever. You can do the twist thing if you want. I don't give a fuck, mate. I think he's the best NA player ever. And quite frankly, I did think it was plausible he could get good again. I would never have predicted this. I'm not one of these people who talk shit like that. But to me, it was obvious in Liquid. The real problem he had was he'd had so long as the guy who essentially got everything he wanted in the team. He got all his spots, his resources. Yeah, I've even heard potentially he decided who left and who joined or who got their roles. And that might have even been why there was friction with, let's just say, other stars in Liquid who might not like, that might have thought he's a bit egotistical. So what I've heard is, basically, when his numbers tanked and his game tanked, eventually, they took the keys away from him in Ek and TL. And you saw towards the end, he was almost being put as like, he was kind of a supportive element or some shit, wasn't he? That team was about Yekindar and Naf and maybe even Orson. You know what I mean? Like that was the time period where he clearly didn't get his spots. Whereas the best thing about going to Cole is because he's way better than the players they should have, he gets everything, as I would imagine. I would imagine he's right back to all his stuff. And this is a point I want to make. It's more of a philosophical point. So I'll bat it back over to you after this, which is this is why I have like a philosophy, which even though I'll flame great players that do badly, I do have a philosophy that goes like this. You never bury an all-time great player. You can do it with ordinary players. There's plenty. Ordinary players are 10 a penny, as we say in English. But an all-time great player, you never bury them until they decide they're done. And what I mean by that is this. You will never see me do what other people do, where they go, you've had your best days. You should probably retire now. I don't do that, mate. What I always say is the opposite. I actually think this is what you should do. You should go down a level. Get your star spots back. But this is all I ever wanted from Guardian and Oscar and Kenny S. I don't want you to try and be at tier one again. You've got to prove it again. But if you go down, you are so great. I'm actually going to give you sort of the outlier states that you could go back up to the top. Maybe your talent is so prodigious, you could get back up there. Now, a lot of those names I mentioned didn't happen for, and maybe they didn't even put in the time. And nowadays, everyone would tell you, well, of course, Kenny S and Guardian should retire, etc. But I just know those are such exceptional players. I'd personally think it's more about their mindset, whether out in their life as to whether they can be great. So I think this is actually a great example, by the way, for people who are like the tier two or tier 1.5 teams of how you can actually gamble on the old star. Same as you do in football this all the time, mate. Like if someone used to be a mega striker for Man City, you don't just go, well, it's not good enough for Man City, so there's no point us, like, you know, Aston Villa signing him. It's like, you should sign him, mate. Maybe you can rejuvenate him. Maybe you can put the team around him and bring it back. What do you think on that angle? Because obviously, like I say, it's a tough convo because I've essentially said I would take Rain out of a team, but I never said Rain should retire. You'll notice that. I never said that. Exactly. So what's your take on this angle?
Right. I think I'm right there with you in the sense of if you're a Liege and you are picturing more fruitful years of Counter-Strike, then a move like Complexity was the best choice to do at that time. That's just clear cut. What I will say, though, is that for this kind of incredible success that we've seen from Complexity, which that's how I'm going to describe it. Like, second place in Sydney is the greatest success.
Let's be real. They almost won. Straight up.
They had a great case of winning IEM Sydney. So the best result they've had in years and years and years. I think you needed two sides of the equation, right? You needed a Liege to come in and not only individually shine and make good on all the positions he's getting, but also behaving like a leader, like a captain. Even JT is the leader. You needed him to behave like a captain. And apparently you're getting that from him. So that's one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is you needed players who's with that mentoring are going to overperform. That's what you needed. If you want to have Complexity have these kind of deep runs into tournaments, it's not just going to be Elise. Like, Elise is going to have great moments. But when we're talking about Floppy's incredible upticks, you can look at the numbers. They're not lying. Like, he's got 1.14 or something at this event. That is nowhere near what he's had past 3 months prior to Elise joining. Grim took a mega hit when Elise joined. He went from being the star of the team to disappearing completely as Elise joined the team, had to adapt through different roles. I talked to him about it. And now he comes back up and he's got better numbers as well. And also got a few moments. Even JT famously, notoriously had a couple of maps where he's supposed to be, like, there were moments where JT had numbers that were in the vein of Pronaxes and Existence, whatever, like the red numbers, the one at the very bottom of the barrel. He had maps on maps on maps where he had incredibly impact, great numbers. Famously against G2, he probably single-handedly wins Anubis with that double one-tap dig onto Nico and the next player onto the A side when that's what breaks G2's economy. So if you have all of these elements coming together and the players are improving and are benefiting from that sort of mentorship that's coming in from Elish, then fuck yeah, that's winning. That's the winning combination. That's exactly what you were hoping for. And I really think that Elish delivered exactly what we hoped from him. And I think the rest of the crew also stepped up, because he on his own, like Elish isn't as simple or as I were, whatever. Like, he on his own would not get that team there. You need the rest of the crew to kind of come up and kick it in. And that's exactly what they did. So now I'm very, very curious to see how this Complexity 9 affairs in the next few events. Because what I've seen from them, and I want to have your opinion on that, I'll kick it over to you after this. What I want to see from them is how replicable this is. And I kind of feel like it is. I don't feel like I've seen too many moments. Maybe JT, I might put JT in like the theoretical kind of gray area where I'm not sure if he can actually provide like that. But from guys like Floppy or Holzerk or Grimm, I sort of see it as replicable, because it wasn't mind-blowing what they did. So individually speaking, I think there is a chance that Complexity kind of established itself as like I'd actually playoff contender. I would say playoff contenders in event. And this would be an incredible improvement for this organization if you consider the last few years.
I'll do the classic Thor in here, because what people don't know, and this is where the problem with my persona is, it's like the concept, you know, in a jet fighter, there's that concept that when you fire the heat-seeking missile, everyone's seen Top Gun, Maniac, we all play with boys. When you fire the heat-seeking missile, there's a thing called a flak, whatever it's got, grenade or something, and when you fire that out, it fires like a bunch of pieces of metal, and you try and get the heat-seeker to go to that instead, right? So essentially, my persona acts as the flak grenade, and unfortunately, it means people go, all you ever do is say one shit. It's like, no, if you ever listen to what I say, I'm actually a very like level-headed analyst. It's just like I always say the line, it's a great line, I just put a bit of extra mustard on the hot dog. Still the hot dog, still the same meat, still a bun. But I tell you what, I put a little bit of spice in. You know what? I put some pickles on there, put some spicy fried onions, you know. That's just my style. And unfortunately, that triggers people. So I'll do the same as I did with Mouse Slaps episode. I'll give them some flowers, but I'll also take away some things where I think it can't last. So the Elish angle, that can maintain. If you go and look actually at the numbers of people like Grimm, totally plausible. Halzerk actually pretty much where he normally would be if they had a good run. The Floppy one, I'm a bit more suspicious of, just because, like you say, that's not really what he was doing before. And quite frankly, in these teams, as far as I know, this is the thing everyone tells me on all of his teams. The thing they say they like about Floppy is he's supposedly like a rein of the team. He's a guy where you're not giving him everything. He's not the star player. So he's actually almost like an X-factor player in that sense. So to me, maybe he's like the one I'm looking at as to whether you can get the fragging up to the level you're going to have at future tournaments. On the JT one, that's an interesting one. Look, I don't believe he can frag as well. I'm with you. There are times, I always said this, I've even said it to him himself, I actually like this guy, by the way, I actually respect his game. But I told him, the problem you have is this, mate. I'll make a lot of fucking, essentially, I'll die on the hill of like, look, Kerrigan's calls are just so good. You know, don't worry about the 0.89 rating. You know, we can make it work. Like, and that's, besides, that's Twist's fault. He only had a 1.05. I'll do that shit, right? I can't do that for you though, JT, because first of all, you don't have those players. So you don't have the players at that. And then secondly, you have at times posted 100 numbers. You have had the, like you're saying, we're talking like the 0.6 rating or something like that. I do think, unfortunately, that is almost impossible to overcome. If you go to that level of fragging, you have to be Kerrigan, essentially. And even he doesn't frag that bad, by the way. That's where your calls would almost have to be like twice as good as the other guy's calls, if you know what I mean. Like, essentially, you'd have to be able to make your team win 4v5. And then the other part is this. I actually do think he's an underrated caller. If anyone knows my content from right back to before even this lineup, back when they were Cloud9, you know, when initially Cloud9 had them as a budget roster, him and Floppy, and then they had OC and all those guys and Mottam. When they had that lineup, I used to tell people, here's what's sad. Like, I could be a fan of this team because I watched them in Flashpoint. I said, I could be a fan of this team because actually I think the calling is one of the best parts of their game. Like, if you ever watch, dude, TC, the coach who's still there, TC and JT clearly put in time in demos, by the way. Yes. They would even sometimes have actually like takes on like, for example, like, you know, like Lane on Inferno or something on like A-Site. They would have like takes and smokes and stuff that like actually some teams didn't have. Like, they had stuff where they were sort of trying to like make up the difference in that sense. But as I say, with that lineup, I mean, you had even less firepower then. And then you frag badly. At the same time, it's like, it sounds fucked up, but I'm going to say, look, one part of your game is really good, but I can't keep you as the IGL if we're going to be on a top team. So in theory, I actually don't think it's an anomaly that he can call well. I do think if he has the weapons, this guy's actually an underrated caller in that sense. Like, one of the weird things about Counter-Strike, if you're a casual fan, is It is true. Like, there's a degree to which the casual fans, right, maniac. I always say this about football, soccer as well, right? You don't want to tell people it's about scoring goals because it isn't, right? If you're a coach, it's about, you know, tactics and team play and what's the link-up play and then what defensive scheme and how do we... But at the end of the day, the reason why people like Ronaldo are, like, simple and OP is you could play, like, total shit for 90% of the game, and if they score a hat-trick, you win 3-2. You win 3-2. The game doesn't care at the end, like, but you didn't have any possession. You didn't do the corners properly and what was going on with the league. It doesn't matter. If they bang in three goals, you win the game. The problem on his team, like we're saying, is Elise could maybe do this. I'll give him like the chance because he's been so great and it's a new game. It's there on the floppy one. Essentially, I don't quite know if you'll have the firepower. But the key thing for me is this. This is like a not quite as good version of what Mouse did for me. I don't think Mouse could maintain that, but I actually think, we can talk about that if you want, I actually think at this event they showed, the quality is there though, the basis is there. We were actually right on that last episode. They have sort of kept some of the pieces there. It's just the ones that were the overperformers didn't overperform. I think there is a basis in, but I would say it's more like this. If I look at this team and I try to project 6 months from now, it's more like if you keep this lineup, and I'm assuming everyone doesn't make like insane Saudi super teams, like four of them or whatever, say it's a similar feel to what we have now, then I think there's a world where you could be sort of like the cheeky seventh place team or the sixth place team. You know what I mean? Exactly. That's like where you could, so essentially you'll be a playoff team. And then you know what, like this, if you have a brilliant run, go to a semi, you could maybe nick a final. I don't really know, like, obviously, they could have won this one, but I don't know that you could win trophies. It's like I said on the Mouse one. To me, Mouse is like a better version of this. They've got like a bit more of the firepower and also their calling looks great. So to me, I'd put it more in that sort of a range for me. Like, I don't hate on them, but I'm not going to do that thing where it's like, because unfortunately, I do think this is tough. People want to do the movie storyline of like, right, this is like now the new baseline, and then either we'll keep doing this or, you know, we can build from here. It's like a lot of this looked like everything came together. Everything, you almost couldn't ask for more if you call.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when I say I can imagine them becoming like a mainstay playoff team top eight, that's a compliment.
Yes.
That's a compliment. Yes. That's because it is a huge improvement from what it was before, which was basically they just show up and eventually make life a little bit hard for a top team, and then they would just fall by the wayside and end up top 12.
Dude,
top
they used to do that thing I hate where they would just do moral victories. You know, it's like, oh, we took a really good team to three games, then we lost 40. It's like... That's good once, but if you do it every time, like, that's depressing, if you know what I mean. Like, I can't give you too many points for that.
So that's a huge, like, it's a huge flower, as you say. It's a lot of flowers to say that they would be playoff team. And also on the JD topic quickly, I also think that his calling has been great, but I think he's been able to benefit from Elise's experience in the mid-round calling. And that's right. Not as easy as it sounds. Like, it's not easy as it sounds. When you are a leader, if you're JT, you've worked with TC for a very, very long time. You have a play style. You have your Counter-Strike. You have your ideas. And you know what's working for you. You have someone who's coming in with, obviously, a very set vision of how Counter-Strike is supposed to be played. And he's got more experience than you. And arguably, he knows better than you about the game. He's reached level that you haven't reached. I don't think it's always that easy to say, hey, listen, okay, like, let's try and find a compromise between the way I want to play Counter-Strike, the way you want it. How can I include your vision in the way I want to play? Some IGLs have completely dissolved under the weight of a stronger, more experienced player who's come in.
For sure.
And made them feel like they were outdated in how they were looking at the game. It takes a special kind of character and a special kind of quality as a man and as a leader to say, okay, well, teach me. Like, teach me. How do you want to play Counter-Strike? What are the moves we can do that we aren't doing anyway? What am I calling that is wrong? And then instead of just dissolving, actually keeping together your identity as a leader and just improve. And I think he deserves a few praises for that, because I agree with you. The Counter-Strike they played, it was in vast majority very sound, very interesting to watch, like good mid-round calls, a lot of re-seeking information, moving on the map, trying to be ahead, a step ahead of your opponent. That's something that you can replicate for me. Like, if you actually have this system and this symbiosis within the team for these moves, like, good for you. That's something where I want to give JT some props. Because I think he deserves them.
Right. Even though we're doing like IM City, I think we can obviously segue and maybe we'll make this, like, we've got a couple of topics left I think we've got time for. What I would ask you on is this, right? As I said, behind the scenes, it is all but confirmed Twists will be on Liquid. Like, that's basically the story I've heard. Like, I know initially it was going to be like, is it Falcons at this one? Basically, from what I'm hearing, it really is the case behind the scenes. He picked Liquid. That's what it's going to be. They're going to make this Liquid lineup with Zeus and Skulls. And like, that one, as far as I know, is pretty solid. It's going to be Cadian. Like, from what I'm hearing behind the scenes, that is actually going to be the lineup. And the only reason it was delayed is, like, I won't say who, but basically, like, instead of Skulls, they were maybe going for some other bigger names. And that was the one they fell back to, was the gamble, you know, the prospect. They were actually trying to do a super team, as far as I've heard. happen. I'll say the names when the statute of limitation passes, boys, but I can't for right
we've
now.
We've heard a few, there yeah, were a few names.
But, there was even more. There was a lot of people I've heard they sort of asked for this one. They really like tried to, okay. You know, there was one of those big boards where you're doing this and this and this. So, okay, based on this idea, obviously now it's mad because you just won an event, but now twist sleeves, which is like, because the one thing I think is this, and there's another, I'll do what I just did with Elish. I don't think when you have a winning lineup, you ever break the lineup until you know you can't win. And if you look at FaZe, dude, this almost cracked me up. On the HLTV article, where they were, I think it was the article, not Twitter, that when they were writing about FaZe winning the event, they phrased it like this, Maniac. And all I want to do is I'll just put yourself in this context, right? You were a professional player. You had a long career. They phrased it like this. It was something like, you know, and FaZe broke their drought of not having won events since, and it was like March. Like, what? How many events are you... HLTV writer, how many events do you think a pro player is supposed to win? Like, are you aware, like, that it's pretty good to win events? And by the way, I'll just put it in context also of the other players. Like, it's not like Vitality's won 5 events. It's not like Heroic's won 5 events. It's not like Ents has won... Whoa, who? G2's won 2. Vitality's won 2. Like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? Like, 3, sorry. Like, I think you're overreacting to the not winning their part, but at the same time, they weren't winning the championships. It's true. And they were always going out... They were doing a bit of a call themselves. They were doing a tier... 0.5 call, essentially. They would always be like, oh, we almost beat them. Oh, we almost got them on 2 maps when they got us on the 3rd minute. So at the same time, part of me is bummed about this. It's like, I don't ever want you to leave. It's why it's not that I know the Na'Vi lineup could have kept doing it. It's that we'll never know because they broke the lineup up and kicked Boomage. I know it's sad, but I need to know. I just need to know that it did. I actually need to know it didn't work a minute. Then I'm like, phew, right. It's okay. He can go. We can bring in the new guy. But I don't ever want to believe, you know, like, there was like 5 more championships in us, but we didn't keep the lineup together. So in this particular case, part of it feels like a bummer that Twist is leaving because you actually are going to mess up this whole thing. And as I said earlier about how the stars of the team sort of did it by committee, the thing that's crazy is I know there's no way Carrigan and FaZe actually could know how those players would fit together. At best, you speculate. At best, you have conversation. And what would you do? But you never know until it goes into the server. It's why so many super teams have failed. But I do think that was one of the most uniquely sort of balanced, like, I think it's one of the best well-balanced teams of all times. Why, if you notice, my contrast was always Fnatic 2015, because it's the same thing. It's like you had this mix of players, and it's just the way they overlapped and then fit together, which made this crazy team play. But here's the weird thing. On the one hand, I hate it. Like, I don't want them to break, so I want to keep it going. But at the same time, and this is why I did that little line earlier, it might be like, what, Elise? The best NA player. Have you seen Twist? She's winning all the Grand Slam. It's like, bro, if you look in FaZe, if we're talking about the 3 stars, Twists was the lowest performer of the 3 stars consistently. He had the Cologne one where he could have had the MVP. That's it. All the other titles they won, by the way. Go look. He's sometimes like 1.707 rating when they win the event. So to me, that's like, if you say like, he's the NA GOAT, it's like, why does he get that championship? But for example, Elise didn't get this championship with like a 1.25 rating. Like, I think that's where people get lost in the narratives, right? So what I'm going to say is this. It'll be shocking because everyone was just talking about Rain going out. But I have to say, if you actually look how he generally played in FaZe, look, he did his part when they won the championship and he was like, enough. But I never actually saw him ever as the best player in FaZe. Like, for me, that was always between like Brokey and Rops, basically. It was depending on what map it was, what tournament it was. Sometimes even Rain would actually outperform Twist at a tournament. Essentially, as much as this will sound sacrilegious, I do like Twist's game. I don't think this is the player that's impossible to replace, Maniac. I think there's a lot of really skilled riflers you could bring in and you could sort of get right back to winning ways, potentially, if you face.
Yeah, okay, I'll probably meet you halfway. I agree that there would have been players who'd been more harmful to replace. For example, if Rob's just said I'm out, then I think
sure,
Rob's really
that's
is
the main
one.
Unique, yeah.
He's kind of a unique profile, right?
Yes.
I do believe that in terms of, if you put Rain on a pedestal in terms of low maintenance player who doesn't really get a whole lot, I think Twist is kind of the same way. I don't think Twist gets a lot. I think Twist makes the best out of whatever he needs to be put in. So I don't believe he's going to be impossible to replace, but I am very surprised by the move. But what this tells me, actually, and this is why I'm kind of validated in my analysis of this victory of FaZe Clan, is that there must have been issues ramping up and growing the past few weeks and months that have led him to the idea that going somewhere else was the right move.
Yes.
And this victory in Sydney is so contextual, and as impressive as it was, so contextual that it isn't enough to reframe your future thinking, well, hold on a second, maybe I was wrong. Actually, I think we can keep winning together. It might be more than one player, but they might have the idea that, okay, this perfect storm that just hit us, we don't know if this is something that can keep on going. And right. all of the issues that we've had in the past probably are still true and valid. If you talk about motivation and CS2 being an extra like 5, 10%, I get that. I understand. I think it's the same for a whole lot of players. But eventually, this is a boost that has an expiration date. You're not going to get plus 10% motivation always. Oh, no. If there were issues in the team, eventually it will catch up to them. So that in itself, I think, is very telling of the situation of FaZe. And they did look a little bit out of breath. Because, yeah, I agree with you. I think when you say, oh, the draw of trophies, of course, we're being overdramatic. But they did look out of breath in the past events prior to Sydney. Like
they definitely had some third maps where they just got dusted off by people and got home exactly. in embarrassing fashion, sure.
And it was very, very uncharacteristic of FaZe Clan. They had a few of these moments. Now, to talk about like the Liquid move as a whole, I think it is a very big risk for Twist to go to Liquid. I know there's a pre-existing relationship between him and the org, and he's probably had a sentimental connection to it. I can understand that. I can empathize with that. But you said it, like FaZe, how many lineups did FaZe need to put together to get to the point where they had that perfect balance in this project? Like a million, exaggerating, a million players put that jersey on until we got to the point where, okay, hold on a second, this is working, this is perfect. Yes. We have all the roles, we have our aggressive, we have our passive players, we have our late rounds, we have our early rounds, we have everything. Bro, it's like, the only thing I can imagine is the two set main sitting arguments have to be the quality of the roster individually and players. Like I do think Naf is still underrated. I think Naf is probably one of the most underrated player in the history of Counter-Strike overall. I rate him very, very highly. I do believe that Yekinder off of the IGL's duty can still deliver better than what he was doing. So individually, I can see it. And then it has to be. It has to be the promise of playing with Kadian that has some sort of attractiveness to it. It must be, you got to play with Kadian. It must be the ID. Because otherwise, I don't understand why.
Not for you, but keep going. I've got a counterpoint for you. Here's the angle. You've done what we all do. I do it myself all the time, mate. No one ever talks about the coaches. Who's going to be the coach of Liquid Maniac?
Isn't it going to be Zeus? Now I have Zeus.
Zeus was there when Twists popped off in Liquid. So all I'm going to say is this. If you, here's the thing, because let's put the narratives together from all the interviews. Everyone's seen those, as far as I know, but those photos aren't fake. Twists really was the guy where, even if I'm saying his numbers weren't that great, he would grind the game out as soon as he get eliminated and be like, fuck, what am I doing wrong? Like, Carrigan, is there something I could do about my game? He was a guy who wanted to be better. And I actually got the sense, by the way, even though they've won, I mean, they haven't won as much like we're talking about. I did get the sense, even if they've won, not to be egotistical, but he did sort of think sort of like, yeah, but I'm not like Twist 2019 when I win, am I? It's not like I'm like a star player while we win. Sometimes I'm contributing here or I have a map here. I do get the sense that sometimes maybe he felt a little bit out of place in the team in that regard. And so all I'll say is, first of all, go back to Liquid. Like we're saying, there's a lot there, by the way. The Cadian angle's brilliant. Naf's already your boy already. Spoiler, I'll just throw this out there. And again, we'll come back to it months later. Don't worry. I will say two of the players, their best pals on, you know, oh, we love each other. There was a little bit of friction between Legion and Twist. I'm just going to say that. Just going to put that out there. I mean, I think actually one of the issues they had in their game is, if you look at them, eventually, after years, their game sort of settled not too dissimilar. They are sort of maybe players that would be in similar roles. So I always got the sense, if you think about what I said earlier of Elige, the problem was, it's Elige's team. So if you twist, you can only ask for so much, you know. And actually, as you saw, dude, they might even bounce you for Fallen. Like, they didn't necessarily hold you in the same regard. Well, here's the thing. Elige's gone, mate. There's no Elige. It's okay. You can come out to play. Now Elise is gone and your boy Zeus is there again. I'll tell you what, Zeus is another guy, by the way. I view him as a coach, a bit like Carrigan as an IGL. It's brilliant at working as a stars. He'll find a way to bring the best out of people. He's got a really good attitude, actually. Obviously got mad experience with Zeus and Twist and a bunch of other people. I wonder if that's part of it as well, because you're right, the most telling part about this is the way the story came out. When the initial story was, well, what's happening is Twist is just joining that Falcon super team with Nico and, you know, well, that just sounds like someone gave him like an extra zero on the check and he was like, well, you know, fuck it, cash out. That one would be a reason to go. If you then choose Liquid over that, spoiler, Liquid's not going to be paying what the Falcons one is. That, you're right. I hadn't even thought that. That actually implies, no, you just want to leave FaZe. You want to be in a different setting, set up. And in this case, maybe you do want to go back. A lot of people don't know this. This is the thing in people's careers. People, if you were Twists, you might have thought you retire in Liquid, just like Elise probably thought you did. So if you sort of get a chance to go back while you're good and like do it right, and let's have like the second chapter of my career, maybe you do it, maybe you run it back. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some enticing parts to this whole roster that's being put together. Obviously, it's just media reports at the time, but as you say, things point out towards it actually happening. I do think you have
Your expectations, if we make the lineup you've seen on paper, so the lineup on paper is, like you say, Yekindar off IGL, Nafs in his normal spots, Skulls is going to come in as like an aggressive rifler, and then you've got Twists comes back, probably like semi-lurk or something, and then you've obviously got Cadian's going to be AWP and IGL. What do you think of this lineup? Like, for you, is it like, I mean, I dread to use the word super team, but is it going to be like a crazy roster? Is it going to be an elite team for you immediately? Are you hyped?
Honestly, yes, I am hyped. I think it gets my attention for sure. What I do wonder is, I think a lot of that team is going to depend on Cadian's ability to rally these people under like a single umbrella of Counter-Strike. And it feels like a huge ask. A huge, huge ask. Because, of course, Yekindar has an idea how he wants to play Counter-Strike. I think it's already been proven. He went from being a secondary caller to an IGL. So definitely he has a propensity to take control of whatever is happening. So you have to have Cadian and Yekindar sort of handshaking or shaking hands and agreeing on the Counter-Strike they want to play. They're going to need to do that very, very quickly, because if that doesn't work, then that you can already put that project to bed. Like, I think that's it. That there's a first obstacle right there. Aside from that, I think that there is enough individual power in there to maintain some sort of a floor level of being dangerous from the get-go. Skulls is a bit of a gamble. I think he and Zevi were kind of put together as these next or soon to be incredible players from Brazil. I think Zevi already showed propensity to be choke a little bit in like high stage and like important moments. I've seen him already falter a little
bit. He's an AWP, it's harder to jump up, sure.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, not the same with Skulls. I feel like he was, whenever yes. I put my eyes on his playstyle, I feel like he was delivering all the time. So I would say the gamble is interesting, and as a secondary solution, because as it sounds, it was not necessarily the first name on the list, but I do think it's an interesting gamble. And after all, you know, time moves forward, so you might have to gamble on a new and upcoming player. So why not? But I do think that Yekindar off the IGL role, I think, and this is my problem, and here this might be a point where you and I, we can debate on. I don't think it's that easy for a player that used to be really good to then have to go through the drought of sucking as an IGL and then just revert it automatically back to whatever it is you were doing in the past with the same kind of confidence and the same kind of performance. That is a little bit of a gamble. Like, if you tell me right now, listen, Maniac, Yekindar is going to do exactly what he was doing in VP. I saw it in the future. I saw my crystal ball, and it's going to happen. I would say, holy shit, that's amazing. Wow, yes. You have this aggressive player. You have Naf as a closer, end of round. You have Cadian, who's going to be like the maestro, diving in, and Twist is going to be closing as well. It's going to be great. But yeah, I mean, where is Yekindar's confidence at right now? Like, what do we expect from him?
Okay, I get you. Okay, we'll do it then. Because here's the thing. I was trying to sort of bait you into just saying it'd be amazing off the bat and everything would be awesome. But as usual, Maniac, you're like an onion. You have more layers than I ever expected to get at all. So okay, we'll do it then. We'll break it down. Because I sort of agree with you. The problem with this one is, this is one of those ones where on paper, this looks fucking amazing. Even the angle I said of Zeus coming back, I'm a massive Zeus fan. Like, I think every team he touches, basically, he gets like more out than you'd expect, or he gets them to a very good level. So I always thought, by the way, it was a crime that, like, basically behind the scenes, he's one of the people who had some issues with EG and maybe they didn't put in the money they should to get the players they should when he used to coach them. So sadly, he never got the gigs after that. He was never getting these offers. I was always out there on Twitter saying, your G2 should pick him up to control Nico. Why doesn't this guy? Maybe Furia get him. They can get the other players and Art under control. You know, I was always trying to give him the big gig. I'm glad he's got the TL one. Obviously, they're going back to the well on that one. They know he's a great coach, etc. But the key thing for, and also I'll just say this right now, if you're an NA fan, Zeus is the one who kickstarted the era of Liquid being like an elite team who could actually win everything. Yes, he didn't get it over the line with the Grand Slam one in 2019, but in 2017, going into 2018, he was the one who took them to finals, dude. Before that, look, NA could like fluke a tournament. They weren't making like semis and finals every time. Like, he made that team elite. So I will say, if you're Liquid, I'm very glad you actually did sort of like revisit this. So that one, I'm kind of safe on. Like I say, the Naf one, I told Naf this himself on camera, off camera. He's just mastered his game. You'd be a fool to shift Naf's spots and roll. He's a player who's, it's actually incredible. You just keep him in his positions. You don't worry about him, especially because he's so unique. So no one else has taken his spot anyway. You'd be a fool to bring someone in, unless, by the way, it is literally Rops or something like that. I'm not getting any other lurker than Naf right now. So if I take Naf, the joke is this though. Every other player, like you say, you hinted at, every other player has a gamble element, but this is where you've got to think of the angles to get it. So I'll do it like you. For Yekindar, that is a very real phenomenon. Dude, that has even hit players like fucking Shox. Even if people don't understand, Shox is one of the most transcendent talents probably ever to play in esports. Fucking Counter-Strike. Like, this guy, for real, it felt like you could trip over and get in a world-class form again. Every time he went to IGL, mate, it will take a bit from his game, and then you were just gambling, like, flip a coin. Is he actually going to be really amazing next year? Is he not? I don't even think he knew. So the Yekindar one is a very legit one, because what people won't understand is this. Yekindar has sick headshot aim, but that isn't actually what made his fucking crazy entry game. His crazy entry game clearly was based on a mixture of, I do think this is why he became an IGL. I do think he studied demos. I do think he tried to figure out opponent spots. And then also, he had that magic feel as an entry on T side. Now, here's the downside of that. That's also why when the feel was off or he looked like he was nervous in a major, that's why he could fuck up the half too. Because then he would maybe like, you know, he doesn't have the feel. Should I do the peak now? Do I do it slow? Do I do it fast? Do I say last time, you know, I came in like sort of like contact pace and this time I just hit him like a ton of bricks. That when that feel was off, he didn't look like the same genius to me. So that's a gamble when you go away from that style. And remember, the silliest thing they did in their team was basically bring Patsy in and go, you're sort of like 80% of Yekindar. Go to work. And it's like, you even gave that guy all your spots. You know what I mean? So that was already did. I'm with you on that one. That's not the guarantee that everyone hopes it is. Even though we all agree, no one was really a fan of him as an IGL, quite frankly. Then you go to the others. On the Twists one, like I just said, I get the sense he's going to be changing roles up. I don't think he's going to be the same Twists from FaZe. So I don't know how he adapts to that. In some ways, on a higher level, this is like the Elise to complexity move, right? Okay, maybe you can have better roles. Are you going to go into them? Are you the player you once were? Then on the Skulls one, look, he's the biggest gamble. It's obvious, right? But the good one about that is, if any of these other gambles works out, I think he can even survive if it doesn't work for now. And I agree with you. Of all the players in the Brazilian scene, Skulls and Zevi were two of the most obvious ones, not least because they weren't ever on Furia. They weren't even in a team that was in abroad. They weren't even MIBRs in the bloody... they at one point in time were in like the Blast system, and their little players could go and play there, and you'd see them play more times. Basically, if you're Pain, you always played the RMR into a major, and then that's why if you're someone like Zevi, it sucks. You basically farm tier two, go to tier one, you try to AWP them, and it's zero you're playing against, you know, so you get your head kicked in and you look shit. I'm with you. Skulls look like the most obvious one. He would even sort of hold up then. And his skills seem good. And also, the other very promising thing for me is, if you go and look, he essentially only started playing these lands in something like the latter part of last year, mate. Like, he isn't a guy, he's quite young, he doesn't have this crazy history, he's not like an established player. This isn't like getting like Cello or something. We've seen him play a billion years, mate. He's from Luminosity about 5 years ago or something, you know. That player I know isn't going to make a jump up. He's probably going to be a 0.67 kill per round player. Skulls really does look like there's real talent there. So like I say, that one is more like, I need that to be a gamble I can handle it. The Cadian one is the spiciest one. Because first things first, we're all going to do this. When I see that move and I just look on paper, it's actually, because no one thought it was possible, no one ever thought he could leave Heroic or he would leave Heroic. And if he does leave Heroic, he's only going to Astralis right now. No one's even had this as a pathway. So because we've never even considered the counterfactual that he goes and joins Liquid, when you actually look at it on paper, if this was Zeus, you are a fucking genius, mate. Because Liquid has never worked around a primary AWPer since Simple. Since Simple, the rest of the time it was Nitro and then Aussie. And if you ever saw Aussie, they never really gave him a chance. They never put him in the spots. They never gave him the resources. They always sort of knew, you got to hold back a bit. We can't really put all our eggs in the Aussie basket. And Nitro didn't even play like a primary AWP. He just did the AWP on certain CT sides where it made sense. And quite frankly, other than that, he was just an IGL. He essentially can be, it's one of the only teams ever where it's like, actually, this already plays like a Heroic does in the sense that like, we know how it is to have an IGL who's an AWPer and the IGL. And guess what? He doesn't have to be the best player. So if anything, this could be Nitro 2.0. But the one problem is this. Cadian was doing all the calling in Danish. Now, you're all going to go, but he was on Rogthorin, not as an IGL. He speaks English. Speaking English is very different from calling in English. Like, I'll guarantee in Danish, he has the way they communicate. Like, I bet it was almost telepathic in that team. First of all, here's another thing. He also had that core for a long time, mate. It's not like he was someone swapping players in and out. So we actually don't know yet what Cadian calls like in English outside of that team. So it's not guaranteed. But I do think if you look how he opt, I was critical of him on Heroic. If this lineup works, he could be fucking amazing as the IGL AWP on this one. I think this could really be like a god tier move. So I'm on the one hand, I'm super excited, but man, there's a lot of question marks. It's like almost everyone's got a question.
I feel like the Cadian angle is the most interesting one. It is. Because if you think about it, I see it as a make or break for Cadian to almost enter the pantheon of IGLs. This is how I see it. Because if he can actually make that work in Liquid, close to what he was getting out of Heroic, then this would qualify him as one of the greatest, just almost immediately for me in terms of his ability as a leader. Because you have to imagine what actually made heroic at the time, and you know, the signature playstyle they had and everything that everyone was always referring to is how spontaneous and fast they were and super pacey and yes. gambly and all over the place. And obviously we're going to put a whole lot of that onto Cadian because he came up with that playstyle, and then he had to be super active, and also he represented them as a captain from the outside. So
sure.
that's my question. Cadian found himself in Heroic in a position where he had everyone's ears. As we could see, as events are unfolding currently as we speak, maybe some people had a little bit of frustration in there, but whether they liked it or not, Cadian's had everyone's ear, everyone's respect. And if you were in Heroic, you were under Cadian's tutelage, and that's it. There's no debate. He's the leader. You do whatever he wants. Now he's gonna be brought into a project with established players that became established and successful to an extent without him.
Yes.
They don't owe him nothing. They were here. NAF was here before Cadian. If you're Twist, you've obviously won arguably more than Cadian ever has.
Sure, yeah.
So that's my point. Like, Cadian has a huge challenge to be able to say, "Hey, listen, guys. Like, whatever it is I was doing at Heroic, trust me, some of it is right." Like, I'm going to have to respect the Counter-Strike that you want to play. I'm going to have to respect you as profiles and trying to learn from you and get something together. But some of the Counter-Strike I was playing with Heroic was working. So hear me out. And this is going to be such a deep process to be able to have everyone buy into this idea. I don't even know if Cadian wants to play the Heroic playstyle anymore. Sure. We don't even know that.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
he wants to play a different Counter-Strike. I have him in my head as such a very, like, illustrated, almost boxed in IGL. Like, if you tell me Counter-Strike, Cadian, I immediately envision how the Counter-Strike is being played, much more than other players. Now he's going to have a whole brand new lineup where the necessity of cohesion and synergy of that Heroic playstyle are never going to be reached immediately in Liquid. Just never. Just not even, like, notwithstanding the fact that Cadian is going to speak English, which obviously yes. in itself is a challenge. But people need to understand that for Heroic to play the playstyle that they were, they had to have close to perfect communication and intensity level. And this is one of the reasons why sometimes they were faltering in, like, semifinals yep. and finals, because these moments were, like, kind of testing the limits of how calm you can remain while having high energy, because that's required from the playstyle. You're going to tell me that they can actually reach that level as an international team from the scratch? I don't believe you. I just don't. So how do they deal with that? How does he deal with that? How did the team deal with that? That's, like, from an analyst perspective and a lover of the game, it's, like, tantalizing. Like, what the hell is going to happen?
I'm with you on that, by the way. Like, as the last point, what I would say is this. I agree. I actually think he'd even be a fool to try and do the Heroic playing style. Because as you said, those were basically his boys that he taught to play that style. He obviously fitted to his personnel, and they got the team player to an insane level while all speaking the same language, coming from the same culture, the same team. Everything was the same. So in that scenario, I would give the analogy, this might be like the lesson Zonic had to learn when he went to Vitalik, which is, guess what? They can't play like Astralis, mate. Even if you get Astralis players, they might not be able to, because you know what? Apex wasn't an Astralis player. Fucking Sphinx wasn't an Astralis player. Like, they aren't those guys. And you're speaking in English, you've got a different culture. That part's one of it. And then I'd certainly agree as well, because I'll give you another angle that people might not realize, which is when you look at the whole reason Yekindar became an IGL, it looks like, because, and look, I get it, if you're a star entry, the worst thing in the world is you think the calls aren't good, or they're not the call that they should be, because you feel like you're just getting fucking neutralized. You're getting limited. All the fans are going, "Come here, Yekindar fans." And you're like, "He called that. I would have never gone in there. He called it 3 blind rushes." You know, like, that does happen if you're an IGL. So I will say another angle is you are Cadian, but at the end of the day, you're not Zonic, mate. Like, you haven't won, like, 4 majors or something. Like, if someone like Yekindar, he can go to you, like, "Look, you're really good, but you didn't win the major either. Like, what? Maybe I don't like what you're doing. Maybe you have to win. Maybe there's buy-in from me you have to get." Because obviously, I mean, I'll just say it straight up. I think Yekindar just gradually cocked fucking Nitro. Like, he started out like, "Hey, I'm just here to, you know, entry. Glad to be here on loan, guys. Wow, we had a great run. Ah, you've got a few ideas for, you know, some things about what we were doing in VP." And then, you know, you saw how the interviews went. Then it would be like, you know, suddenly everyone had to say, like, "Yes, he's teaching us a lot about the game." You know, all the shit I was lampooning. And then by the end, it was like, "Oh, Nitro was just like 5 minutes late, so I was just going to call this game. Maybe I called all the maps." You know, like, the way it gradually happened, he, like, infringed upon his territory. You know, it's like basically the joke. It's like when you're in bed and then they keep moving over and over, and eventually you're like, "I haven't got any fucking room over here. I'm going to fall out if I don't do this." Like, so that's another thing we all take for granted, because I agree with you there, by the way. The buy-in is very different when you took people from nothing to where they were in Heroic. That's different when, as you say, you walk in. Because basically, by the way, if you're someone like NAF and Twists especially, you're only here to win. You came to, you know, Nafs stayed and Twist came back to win another Grand Slam. By the way, to win the major. Nafs wanted to win the major at this point in his career, mate. You think, I mean, he said it in my interview. You think he couldn't do what Twist did? Like, he's one of the ones who was looking at Twist going over to Europe, getting into a super team with a great player like it, and thinking, whoa, why can't I do that? Like, why couldn't I be on Vitality and be there lurking? You know what I mean? Like, that was in his, so I think, quite frankly, there's another thing. To us, this is fun. Like, will they be good? Will they be not? I think they essentially do. If you can do this, like, eventually you have to be the best. You have to win championships. You can do this roster.